Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Yeah, apparently our legislature, Lee, thinks it's an outrage that sex offenders who brutalize children should have to serve long sentences. You know, honestly, this year it would have been best if we just didn't send our legislators up there. Like, we just skip the session, just shut it down.
That's an idea I've had for quite some time. We have got more than enough laws on the books, both locally, statewide, and federal. And if we just would simply fund law enforcement and fund the prosecutors and the defense, public defenders as necessary, and just enforce the laws we've got, we would be ahead of the game.
Well. No. We need to slash sentences for violent offenders.
No, we don't.
Who knows? This is from an editorial that was written by Barry Barnett 2 days ago in the Spartanburg Herald Journal. He is the prosecutor for Spartanburg. He says the two bills I'm talking about, one in the House and one in the Senate, the bills, as previously written, reduce the time inmates serve on no parole offenses. Now, no parole offenses are the most violent ones. Everything from murder to armed robbery to rape to sexual assault. Okay. You know, the stuff that nobody really cares if you do. Well, wait a minute. No. The bills as presently written reduce the time inmates serve on no parole offenses from 85% to 65%. But the bills allow inmates who've served just 15 years of a sentence to begin to petition a circuit judge to have their sentence reduced or ended. Can you imagine? He says the bills are retroactive. So they make at least 3,465 no-parole inmates. Again, those are the most violent inmates in the system. The worst of the worst. Eligible for release at an earlier date, including 396 inmates who would be immediately eligible for release, 99 of whom are serving time for sexual assault. Is this a joke?
No, but that's... And there's absolutely nothing funny about it. And you got to hand it to Barnett for doing this.
Good for him. I know. Yeah. I've criticized him in the past. But when you do something good and awesome like this, then we let folks know that,
well,
too.
I mean, these are people that he's put in prison.
Yes.
That he has prosecuted. That he has built the cases for. He and his office, obviously. Mm-hmm. And these people have been tried, convicted, and sentenced. And now they're wanting to look to undo the punishment.
This is Barry Barnett again, the solicitor for Spartanburg Solicitor, same thing as a prosecutor, the main prosecutor. Let me share a frightening example, he writes, of what could happen if the House bill passes. House bills are passed. Imagine a man sexually assaults your 3-year-old daughter, as well as other young girls. He's convicted of first-degree criminal sexual assault in order to serve 40 years in prison under our current no-parole law. Okay, under our current no-parole law, he will serve 85% of his sentence. That's 34 years in prison before possible release. If the House bill passes, though, you and your daughter will have to revisit the crime just 15 years later. Not 34 years later, 15 years later, when you receive notice of a sentence modification hearing. The notice will discuss how the inmate only has to serve 65% of his prison sentence before seeking modification. The original prosecutor is no longer in the solicitor's office, and the original trial judge is no longer on the bench. The new prosecutor and new judge have no knowledge of the case outside of the court transcript or case file from storage. Your daughter and the other young girls just turned 18 years old. They worked through their victimization with counseling, but now must revisit one of their worst days. If the inmate's petition is unsuccessful the first time, the inmate can refile every 2 years till it's granted. You know what this is? This is a victim's terrorization
act. Yes, it is. It certainly is. And people who wrote this ought to be ashamed of themselves.
Absolutely ashamed of themselves.
I don't care if it's Democrat, Republican, whatever. This is absolute insanity. What justice is there for victims when you do stuff like this? What justice is there?
So think about that. Okay, before, your daughter's sexually abused, that's terrible, but he's in prison for 34 years under our current laws. Again, with the new law, at year 15... he begins to be able to fight for parole every 2 years. And before the criminal had to prove he was worthy of parole, guess what? They shift it to the victim. Now the victim must show up at each parole hearing, and the burden is on them now in this new legislation to prove why their attacker shouldn't be released. Not as it is now on the burden of the criminal.
Has he got a bill number on this?
Yeah, he does. Hold on. Okay. It's Senate Bills 155 and 161.
Okay, hang on a second.
No problem.
Senate Bill. Yeah, nothing but a radio show. Going
radio
on
show.
Here.
No, that's okay. This is good for the public, too. Senate Bill 155 okay. and 161, and House Bill 3322
and 3580. 3322
and
3580.
Now, Barnett notes that when outraged victims and law enforcement went to the first hearing from that for this, and asked why they had not been consulted, along with law enforcement, about this outrage, the legislators said, oh, don't worry, we'll fix it with an amendment. But
yeah,
that
right.
never happened.
Yeah.
So I wanted to tell you that before you dive into it and talk to a legislator. Oh, we're going to fix this. Well, they said they would. It hasn't happened. Here's the first line of Prosecutor Barry Barnett's editorial against this, again, in the Spartanburg Herald Journal. I'll put it up so you can read it online. The South Carolina legislature is debating bills that could place you or your family in danger. I mean, this is how bad this is. And by the way, he says, and this is what you said, Lee, he says the Senate bills, and again, that's 155 and 161, House bills 3322 and 3580, were introduced with the hopes of reducing the state's prison population.
That's what this is all about.
Yep.
Legislators will not build more prisons. They will let, and I'll be honest with you, if you are a nonviolent criminal and we're trying to reduce the cost of the prison system in this country, I'm willing to consider that. Maybe there is a way that we can do that for nonviolent criminals. But when you were talking sexual assault of a child, I'm sorry, I'm one of those. You're lucky you don't get the death penalty to begin with, like State Senator Kevin Bryant and former Lieutenant Governor Kevin Bryant wanted to do. Introduce that. Where you, if you committed a sex act on a child, you got the death penalty.
Now, I'm all on board for that.
But you know, that's not the case, obviously, and that as you would imagine, even not even in South Carolina, that didn't get anywhere. But I agree with that sentiment. But this is absolute lunacy.
Yeah, no, it's nuts. Oh, and listen to this. Barry Barnett says, again, he's a prosecutor writing this editorial about these, you know, sentence reduction bills in South Carolina. The bills would retroactively allow thousands of inmates to seek early release who otherwise would not be released. He says Walter Lance, Robert Brown, James Dimsdale, Brady Lloyd, and Leonard Lee Foster are a few of the convicted felons awaiting for these bills to pass. He said these inmates are serving sentences of 30 to 50 years for crimes such as first-degree criminal sexual conduct with a minor, attempted murder, armed robbery, kidnapping, driving under the influence resulting in death, and many of them are you know, repeat offenders. And he said they would all now, instead of having to wait decades more, be eligible to begin to petition for release. I'll send this to you. But, yeah. Oh, by the way, I talked to Alan Wilson about this, our attorney general, like about a week ago, and I said that to him. I said, well, you know, what about just lower level offenses? He said, listen, we don't have many people in our prisons, Lee, for lower level offenses. He said, I know on TV you see the guy who had a dime bag of pot and he went to prison. He said, that just basically does not happen.
You want to know who the sponsor of this bill is? There's one person, Senator Carl Allen of Greenville County, District 7.
Oh, nice. He's a Democrat, isn't he?
Yes.
Yeah. He is. I've interviewed him before. Lovely. How are Democrat bills moving in a Republican-controlled legislature like this?
I love your rhetorical questions.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, we don't like the answers, though, do we?
No.
By the way, if you want to stop this, text the word CALL, C-A-L-L, to 71307. We will send you a link that will help you find your legislators, grab them by the scruff, rhetorically, and give them a call, send them an email. You can use the link to find their public email and phone number. In other words, the ones associated with their state legislative offices, and tell them not just no, but oh, heck no. Again, text the word CALL, C-A-L-L, to 71307. Texter writes, what? The legislature has no money for prison expansion? Didn't they just get a huge lottery tax windfall? Yeah, but they don't want to spend money on prisons. No, they don't, because nobody cares about it. When I say nobody cares about that, people want violent offenders incarcerated. But you can't say, hey, look, I got this new shiny toy for the district. It's just a prison. It's big and ugly. Texter writes, chair of the state legislature is clearly tired of us voters and hope the violent criminals will eliminate us. You know, that's the thing. You know, when I'm asking you today to text the word CALL to the text line, we'll send you a link to help you find your Senate and House members in our state legislature. This is one of those rare chances you actually have to save a life with a phone call to a politician. Truly. I mean, if we let these people out, because it's retroactive, I mean, we will be letting out murderers, rapists, sex offenders, armed robbers. Somebody will die. This is the will die bill. I mean, you literally have a chance this morning to stop a horrific tragedy that'll shatter a family forever. I mean, it is virtually guaranteed. And again, that was the Barry Barnett editorial we're talking about. I'm going to put that up on Facebook. I haven't gotten to it yet. He's the prosecutor for Spartanburg County. And he literally starts his editorial like this. The South Carolina legislature is debating bills that could place you or your family in danger. This is Senate Bill 155 and 161 and House Bills 3322 and 3580. Introduced with the hopes of reducing the state's prison population. Listen, this is a big fallacy. People have seen these Netflix documentaries and they think everybody in prison got caught with a dime bag of pot. Had a long talk with Alan Wilson about this, our attorney general, last week. And I knew this anyway. I've explained it to you before. He said, listen, you know, and I've documented this here in this county. I mean, we just had an armed robber on his fifth armed robbery who had been let out twice on suspended sentences for the previous four. Walked back into a convenience store he had robbed before and killed the clerk, a mother of four. So, I mean, if you think there's people in our prisons for a dime bag of pot, you are sorely mistaken. And Alan Wilson told me this, and I already knew it, just from the reporting I've been doing over the last year here. It takes nearly a freaking miracle for you to end up in prison in the first place. I mean, what do we just have to put the poor 17-year-old kid on Wade Hampton killed, sitting at a light, on his way home from church? His sister, critically wounded, God bless that family, slammed into a guy in a stolen car who had been convicted of stealing two other cars, convicted of grand theft larceny, convicted on two meth labs that he had run, convicted on a whole slew of violent crimes. 20 years in prison he got. The judges suspended it all and let him go. Killed a 17-year-old. So, I mean, you can do all that in South Carolina and you won't end up in prison. So, I mean, I'm getting texts saying, well, I don't like, you know, our prisons are too full. No, they're not too full. They're exactly as they should be if we want to continue to enjoy the same crime rate. We can go back to the old sentencing laws we had in the 90s. You're not going to like that. Wall Street Journal documented this before structured sentencing, and that's what they're getting rid of here. They're getting rid of the mandatory minimum. So that says, well, normally, you know, for first-degree murder, we'd do 40 years here, but he's such a nice boy. How about five? You will have judges that do that. I have seen it in Charlotte when I covered this before they went to mandatory minimums. Most states in the country did. Now Democrats want to reverse that. That's why a Democrat has sponsored this. Texter writes, just watch live PD. They let people off all the time with dime bag of pot. No, because they don't want to go to, you don't want to go to court for that. You kidding me? If you're working for so little money, you're in law enforcement, you want your time to matter. You don't want to mess with some guy with a dime bag of pot. You want to go after an armed robber. Help society. That's why you do what you do. Anyway, Alan Wilson was saying, listen, the people who are in our prisons are already the most violent. They've been given chance after chance after chance after chance. That's who's in there. Forget what you saw on Netflix. It just doesn't happen. And pretty much everybody in the system, and I've seen this in criminal records, you get a felony freebie the first time. I mean, you do the first felony, they just give you, you know, they convict you, sure. And, you know, 5 years in prison, they suspend it and off you go. Right back to what you were doing. So no, that is a misunderstanding of how our justice system works. But again, when you have a solicitor, when you have a prosecutor in Barry Barnett saying, please, you must stop this. We are going to let some of the most violent criminals in the system out at 15 years. So in other words, before you would have had to serve, say, a 34-year sentence for multiple sex assaults on little kids. That would have been the mandatory minimum, 34 years in prison. Now at 15 years, you can begin to petition to get out. And the victim has to show up every 2 years to stop you. I mean, what kind of cold, hateful human being writes it into legislation that they're going to shift the burden of proof in probation hearings, or parole hearings, excuse me, in parole hearings, which means, you know, you get out of prison, from the criminal where it is now to the victim. And if the victim doesn't show up every 2 years with facts, folks, these victims are going to have to hire attorneys. They're actually going to have to pay I mean, you get a public defender if you're in the system, if you're arrested. These victims are going to have to hire attorneys to keep their rapist in prison. I mean, you got to be practically psychopathic as a legislature to sign on to that. A legislator or have not read the bill. I mean, you got to have a cold, dark place in your heart. But that's what these bills do. You want to stop them? Text the word call, C-A-L-L, to 71307. That's 71307. Text the word call. We'll help you find your legislator. Tell him not only no, but heck no. Listen, these guys have run multi-hundred million dollar surpluses every year. They got plenty of money to build more prisons. Plenty of money. They just don't have the political will. We don't need to let the most violent offenders in the system out in order to avoid building prisons. I just think it's and by the way, these legislators know this is wrong. Or they would have run on doing this this past spring, 6 months, 8 months ago. They didn't. Texter writes, "Ooh, you are not seeing the big picture, Tara. These kind of sentencing laws are most always a prelude to more gun control." Well, I mean, you're going to need your guns. You're going to. I love when y'all get good and fired up and the text line explodes. All these people texting call to us about these bills. Yeah, why don't we just let a few thousand inmates out among the most violent? That'll totally be great. We won't need to have jails anymore. I mean, prisons. We won't need to build new prisons. It'll be awesome. You'll love it. But won't the violent inmates be out? Well, yeah, but who cares? Who cares? Wow. We're going to get back into that in a minute, but first we got a couple of other things. And I don't know how to break this to you. This is not good. I mean, it looks good, but it's not good. You know how these things alarm me? When Greenville wins another one of these awards? Yeah, see, because I went through this in Charlotte, and Charlotte was a really livable place. It was a really nice place 20, 25 years ago. Now it is a nightmare. It's just nothing but a traffic snarl. Greenville, unfortunately, has been ranked the 10th best place to live in the U.S. That's according to livability.com. So we're number 10. Raleigh, North Carolina came in at number 2. We beat Charlotte. Oh, that's not good. 4 other cities in the Carolinas made the list. Asheville was 14, Charlotte 21, Durham 23, and Greensboro 51. Okay, so we're number 10. The competition was stiff. More than 1,000 cities with populations between 20,000 and 1,000,000 were ranked on 40 data points measuring economics, housing, amenities, infrastructure, demographics, social and civic, capital, education, and healthcare. And basically what they concluded is what we've found. I mean, this is a wonderful place to live and raise a family, and it's highly affordable on top of all that, yet it has all the amenities, or many of the amenities of a big city. And you can actually get around and afford to live here. You don't have to go live outside the county in some suburb. It's awesome. Or if you're listening on the podcast from somewhere else, it sucks. No, you would hate it here. You'd be miserable. Please. It's terrible. I regret every day I came. There we go. Now, you know what this is going to provoke a flood, is what this is going to do of people, as if we don't have one already. And you know, I got to tell you, these studies are all rigged. No, they are. No. I know. I did this in Charlotte. We started winning all of these awards. I went, why do we start winning these awards all of a sudden? I mean, I know we're awesome. Anyway, I basically ended up using a FOIA and found out that our city council was funneling money to the chamber. The chamber was paying off the editors and bosses at these places to pick Charlotte. And Charlotte ended up the zoo that it is today. I guarantee you we are paying for these results somewhere. You'd really have to know how to find it, and I don't have time to go figure it out. But I'm telling you, when you do this, you just get an absolute onslaught. I don't think they want that. 800-347-1063. But I mean, props for Greenville is great. I mean, Greenville is a wonderful place. We absolutely love living here. I can't say enough about it. I mean, there's very few places that you can live where you get the amenities of a big city. You can live in the county, have great schools. Not all of our schools are great, but many of them are. We've got schools now at the high school level that are doing better on SAT and ACT than the national average. That's awesome. So, I mean, you've got great schools here. They're in town. You don't have to move out of town. And they're in affordable housing districts. You got so many options from elementary school all the way up to high school. Just really strong schools at the top of that. So, I mean, I don't know. This is a great place to live. It really is. 800-347-1063, text line 71307. All right, let's get into this. If the original Open Borders maverick, Lindsey Graham, who now is up for election, so he sounds like Donald Trump, that'll end, trust me, right after 2020. He needs that Trump endorsement. He saw what it did for Henry McMaster. So that's why you're hearing Lindsey talk like this. But whatever. He may be a useful idiot. He's our useful idiot up until the election. And that's why he sounds like Trump. This is today's first epic rant. This is Lindsey Graham on how bad it is on the border and his outrage that we cannot recognize we need an emergency crisis declaration.
I was blown away. So compared to last year, the number of families apprehended at the border has gone up 335%. The number of unaccompanied minors in our custody has gone up by 54%. The average cost of housing an unaccompanied minor for the American taxpayer is $375 a day. We're on track to spend $1.6 billion of housing unaccompanied minors in U.S. custody. If this is not a crisis, what the hell would be? We're being flooded. The numbers are just through the roof.
Sounds like an emergency to me. Yeah, the problem, though, is that the Democrats and the Republicans in Congress just can't seem to figure this out, most of them. This is the second half of Lindsey Graham's epic rant.
You know, there's some, just looking through Twitter just moments ago, there's some complaints about the fact that Senator McConnell took up a vote on this and allowed Republicans, which he knew were going to vote against the president on this. Do you disagree with taking that vote in the Senate when there have been so many times when there was never a vote taken in the Senate?
She's talking about the emergency declaration vote, which Congress is about to slap Trump across the face with. What? There's no border crisis. Never mind. We're about to see reach a record of 100,000 people on the border in March, just for the month of March. But other than that, I mean, there's no crisis.
Here's what the president and I talked about for an hour and a half today, that he's disappointed that he's not able to convince Republicans that this is an emergency. Again, I've been dealing with this issue for a decade. If families get to America, they're released within 20 days. If an unaccompanied minor makes it into our custody, only 2% are returned to the country where they came from. We're sending a signal to all over Central America. If you can make it to America, you're going to stay. We're being overwhelmed. We're on track to have 650,000 illegal immigrants apprehended in 2019. It is a crisis. The legal authority the president is using has been used 50 times. He has the statutory authority given to him by Congress to take money from the military construction budget and apply it to an emergency situation. He's on sound legal footing. I support what he's doing, and I hope the Republican Party will stand behind him.
Well, it's not like there's any fact showing that there's a crisis at the border. Folks, we just had a Washington Post report yesterday. 100,000 projected to show up in March at the border. We have not seen that number since George Bush opened the borders. In the areas along the border that have a state park that abut them and turn those into illegal immigrant highways. We have not seen and pulled the border guard back off the border 2 miles so they couldn't do anything about it. Since Bush did that, we have not seen a crisis of this proportion. Says who? Nancy Pelosi says Trump just makes this up. He just wants a wall. It's a vanity project. It's not like there's anyone on the border. By the way, does she not read the Washington Post? I guess she doesn't. Why don't we hear from somebody who would know? Like head of the Border Patrol?
Secretary Nielsen is going to be urging lawmakers before the House Homeland Security Committee to heed what Customs and Border Protection says are alarming early numbers. Hear how CBP's commissioner put it yesterday.
Based on the experiences of men and women on the front line, this is clearly both a border security and humanitarian crisis. The system is well beyond capacity and remains at a breaking point.
Now, according to the CBP data, they're seeing a 300% increase in the number of family units apprehended this year compared to last year. In fact, in the first 5 months of fiscal year 19, they've already had 136,150, exceeding the total number for all of fiscal year 18, which is 107,212. Now, overall, apprehensions are up
97%. So it's not that they're doing a bad job of apprehending them. They're being overwhelmed. I think Vice President Mike Pence put it the best.
The truth is the crisis on our southern border today is overwhelming our system. Any vote against the president's national emergency declaration is a vote against border security.
in the time of the Great One, he once spoke and said, "Manufacturing is done in this country. You can't bring those jobs back.
Some of those jobs of the past are just not going to come back. And when somebody says, like the person you just mentioned, who I'm not going to advertise for, that he's going to bring all these jobs back, well, how exactly are you going to do that? What are you going to do? There's no answer to it. He just says, well, I'm going to negotiate a better deal. Well, how exactly are you going to negotiate that? What magic wand do you have? And usually the answer is, he doesn't have an answer. So what I've tried to do, what my administration's tried to do is, let's grow those manufacturers.
Shut up. Headline, manufacturers see 2 years of record-breaking optimism. Huh? Wait, what? Yeah. The National Association of Manufacturers released the results of its latest survey. Record-breaking optimism. Do you ever think you would hear that associated with the word manufacturing in the U.S.? It's like a miracle every day in this country. It is. Honest to God. It's like winning a sweepstakes. The survey showed that manufacturers have reported record optimism for 9 consecutive quarters. President Donald Trump has done a lot to improve the economy over that time, including tax cuts, regulatory reform, and reworking of trade deals. This is President Jay Timmons of the National Association of Manufacturers. Quote, manufacturing in the U.S. is on the rise and manufacturers are confident about the future. Why? Well, here we go. Empowered by tax reform. Eat your hearts out, liberals. Empowered by tax reform and regulatory certainty, manufacturers are investing in our communities and our people. You want to know the stark difference? Why Obama was just a brain freeze on the manufacturing industry. You never knew what he was going to outlaw or do. Remember, he was going to bankrupt the energy industry. Well, shoot, you don't want to open a new plant. You don't know if he's going to bankrupt it or what. And you got, remember, Hillary Clinton running around during the election? Well, you know, under me, I'm going to be like Bernie. We're going to end fracking. Dude, you mean fracking for natural gas? Yeah. And oil? Yeah. Well, what pray tell will we run our country on, moron? The National Association of Manufacturing survey found that, on average, 91.8% of manufacturers were positive about their company's outlook. That compared to an average of 68% between 2015 and 2016. See the difference there? That's like 21 points difference, 22 points difference. See what I'm saying? And that's just not having Obama there, and then all the regulatory stuff, and especially the tax stuff. We're getting in business investment again in this country. We're beginning to manufacture again in this country, something Barack Hussein Obama said we would never do. Moron. Folks, we never had problems. We never did. We just had Washington in the way. If they just get out of the way. I mean, it is amazing to me how fast we have seen manufacturing come back, given relatively how much there is still to do to get Washington out of the way. Texter writes about Greenville winning top 10 most livable cities out of over 1,000 that were considered. I see Greenville, the texter writes, as a formerly plain Jane that blossomed into a really hot chick and is enjoying the attention that brings. Unfortunately, she's going to catch, what? A venereal disease called Democratitis as her easy reputation gets around. Well, you know, they always have to come here to fix stuff. They fix things. That's what they do. Oh, by the way, did you see this? The Occasional Cortexes, Dim Bulb Mom. Did you see the interview she did? Yeah, so she proudly tells the world that she raised her daughter to be a Democratic Socialist. And the reason she's a Democrat Socialist is because she cares about the little guy. She cares about how hard it is to live in poverty. She says this right before she volunteers that she moved to Florida because she can't afford New York taxes. But the part of the story everybody's missing is where Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez's mom moved to in Florida. I'll have that and much more coming up next. Wait till you hear this.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.